group, they had any specific thoughts that they'd like to share with everybody else, now is probably an opportunity to do it. And if we have a little bit of discussion, and then we'll try and draw things to a more sort of coherent close at the end, and perhaps come up with some ideas of how we can take things forward. So I don't know if everybody wants to kick off. People at the back of the room that were over in that corner, was there anything that came out of the discussion that you would like to share with everybody else?
Across the world, which, and so each country is calculated on, but the rich countries have produced an awful lot more carbon than the poor countries. So the idea is then that the poor countries sell their emission quota to the rich countries and so gain currency as a result of that. And some people see that as a way of reversing some of the trends and things like third world debt, that you would then actually get an injection of funds. I know some people have a few issues with some of the modelling of it, don't they? But the idea is that each year the total amount of carbon that everybody on the planet is allowed to emit is reduced, so that you end up with an equitable system across the whole of the population of the planet. So in our group, we talked about the changes in legislation that have given rise to beneficial effects, like stopping people smoking on buses, and that the smoking debate was quite a good example. And Naomi talked about how we could do with our Roy Castle type figure, because he was the person that made people believe that passive smoking was a reality. And so you almost need a sort of figurehead of somebody who can point to the damaging effects of climate change, that you can see that as a real phenomenon rather than as this rather sort of distant sort of thing that's happening to people in other countries that doesn't really matter to us.
But we agreed with Ed Marbury, I think, that it was legislation that was measures of the government, the political parties need to take the lead. And that is starting. And we need to support that.
The one thing which really hit people was the need for the passive smoking and children. And I think a lot of adverts were aimed to that, and you saw the data from various people who were doing this kind of thing, the cigarette to be in the market. Which is terrible, and I'm sure that that's a tremendous campaign. Now my anxiety is not for me, the other people like the max, you know, that I am doing the lots of small elements, children, so because I was around. But it's for the children of our children. And it's very, very exciting to focus on and think what they have to go through. I think that is really what's wrong. I know that we don't want to make people anxious because we are afraid that people will shut down and turn away and start to smoke or to something. I mean, we don't just want to get away from it. But it is really, I think, the only way in which to make people realize that, yeah, of course we are going to be alive for the next 10 minutes.
So just down this coast.
And one of the things that we discussed on the group here was our slight disillusionment with the current political system and some of the hypocrisy that is perceived in government policy. And somebody mentioned local action and bypassing actions at government level, a similar sort of, Peter mentioned the changes that they've done in Woking, which one of our local MPs is a great sort of fan, and I gather the chap who's greened Woking is now advising Ken Livingstone on greening London, that, and a lot of mayors in the states have bypassed the federal government altogether and Bush and said, well, we're just going to do our thing and we will network at a lesser sort of governmental level. And so I think some of the things that you were talking about, bottom-up campaigning, there's a lot that could be done at the level of local. There are parish councils in Britain who are aiming to go carbon neutral, and we can argue about what they mean by that. But and you know, cities that could be taking action, like Ken Livingstone has said he's going to make London carbon neutral by a certain time, hasn't he? But those are perhaps goals that could realistically be achieved because local democracy may be more accountable to the opinions of local people than the national government.
I went off a bit about ethical men, the Newsnight presenter was trying to reduce his carbon footprint. But the trouble is, not many people in the country are bothered about Newsnight. I mean, they'd be replete with a bill on by then. But it did go out on Panorama quite recently, and what that chap experienced was that, I mean, it is down to individual responsibilities, but we could really do with a hand from government to make your contribution to be more worthwhile. Like, if you've always got the state standing in front of you saying you can't do that here, you're not being given much of a hand, and you're doing it in spite of politics rather than by politics assistance. And that's exactly what this chap's finding out, that he's gone through the morass. And from what he could do as an individual and his family was so curtailed by politics that says it's on his side, and bloody well isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
I'll
know
that
physics. I mean, I think there's a danger of the real producers of the carbon dioxide, the big power companies and so on, putting all the irresponsibility down on us, that it's up to us to change our light bulbs and so on. But I mean, this the ethical man, look, I mean, the problem with him was he could only get 20% of his carbon footprint. And the rest of it was done for him elsewhere by big companies, you know, where his electricity came from and that sort of thing. And I think that they're already a con artist to a certain extent. Yeah. I like those things over there about the water campaign that say the water's turned off, big business making profit. I think that the WPM has a tradition of putting the blame where it belongs. And I think that we should continue doing that, of saying that it is big business that is causing most of the carbon dioxide emissions. And that we must put the pressure in that. I mean, I'd like to see us, focusing on that power station out along towards the M1, and they're going to privatise the bus service in Nottingham. The bus service is not quite privatised yet, but they're obviously going to. As soon as it gets that way, then it's all making profit and won't be doing anything for the community at all, unless it's making money out of it.
Can I just tell you a personal experience that illustrates not so much that point, but where personal action does make a difference? I'm married to an ethical man who has been doing a carbon audit of our family for the last 2 years, and he's calculated. I've got a book which shows you how to do it, how many tons of CO2 you're emitting, and you look at your electricity, your gas, and transport, which includes car, train, bus, and air travel, right? And we've made real efforts to reduce our emissions. Between 2005 and 2006, we actually reduced our emissions without talking about air travel by 20%. And boy, was that we go around turning the radiators off, I wear lots of woolies and thermal underwear and goodness knows what. And those gains were completely cancelled out by three flights that we made. Okay, in 2005, we had two European flights. He went on one, I went on one. One was for work, one was for a family emergency. Those flights emitted the same amount of carbon as heating our house and cooking all our meals for the whole year. And then in 2006, we had one flight, which was me, and I went to Canada, and that emitted more carbon than heating, cooking, and running all our electrical appliances for the whole year. And all we saved by cutting down everything, 1.9 tonnes of CO2, which was nearly 22% of our emissions, but the one flight to Vancouver was 5.6 tonnes of CO2. So whatever they say, flights may only be 3.5% of emissions at the moment. Of my personal emissions, they are about between 30 and 40%. Right. So it makes more difference than all the energy life-saving light bulbs you can put in.
And it really depends on sort of what, and just to sort of put the framework that individual choice sits within. Because you can either basically run massive public education campaigns that say, please don't fly, if you fly, you're awful. But actually at the moment what we've got is an aviation industry that says, you shouldn't do anything about about the planned expansion, because that would impact on our growth. Well, that means impact on our profits. So basically that's saying, the profits for Ryanair and Flybe and those low-cost airlines are more important than doing something about climate change. So that's essentially a choice, a decision that's being made. And what you get bombarded with is, you know, I live in London, I don't know if it's in Nottingham, on the tube, everywhere you go, take five a year. Take five holidays a year. This is lastminute.com's advertising campaign, of which the five examples, three are flying. You know, and it's you know, including two long-haul flights a year. They're actively promoting that in a framework within which we're paying for the expansion in the airports, we're paying for the fact the VAT is not on there, we're paying for the Export Credit Guarantee Agency to underwrite sales of aircraft around the world. You know, so in the context is fly more, pay £172, so you've paid, I don't know if you have any children.
Yeah.
So one, two. So that's okay. You're paying about £600 a year as a family to subsidise the aviation industry. You're being bombarded with the messages to fly more. You know, that's the context. That's the context within which ethical woman or man is being asked to save the world. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the Arms Trade is a really good example, because I think one of the strengths of the World Development Movement is that we've been able in the past to actually sort of cut through the hype and get to what is actually happening and what are actually the root causes of things. And one of the things that I think is really interesting for me at the moment, particularly as we start spending more money on Trident, and I'm reminded of the line in a very good song which says, spending another few billion propping up a lost empire. Is we get constantly bombarded with the idea that there is this kind of a normal way of doing things, and that normal way of doing things involves the marketplace, and that somehow you are ideologically or unnormal if you don't accept that the market is the place where everything will get solved. And quite often we've even in a few months we've been running this campaign because they say, well, you know, it's fine, Benedict, but you have to accept that the marketplace has to be the final arbiter, and you know what you're suggesting would distort the market. God forbid we distort the market. And then I sort of say things like, so when we decided to go to war with Iraq, did we say we would go to war in Iraq if we could find a company that would run it for us that could make a profit on it? Did we decide that we're going to, you know, I know Halliburton would have run the entire war for us at a profit, and maybe we did, but we didn't. That's not what we're saying. We didn't say, well, we'll go to war in Iraq if we can get the right market mechanism, you know, if that doesn't distort the market. You know, we're not going to buy Trident, you know, unless it distorts the market in intercontinental ballistic missiles. You know, we've made those huge, huge investments as political choices for society. You know, something like, I think, about 100 billion in the last week or so. If those choices had been different, you know, if you take the cost of the US involvement in Iraq, you could basically provide clean, renewable energy for the 1.8 billion people in the world who don't have access to clean energy, saving millions of lives and transforming the situation of women right around the world. You know, unleashing the economic clout of women and therefore the decision-making and political clout of women overnight. But we went to war in Iraq. For the UK's involvement, part of the UK's involved money, we could end fuel poverty in this country, thus reducing emissions for people's households. We could certainly afford to close down Drax. You know, a single power station puts out more emissions than Mozambique, Zambia, Angola, and Namibia, and I think another one as well. You know, that's one power station. Yeah, and I think the World Development is, you know, we should take what we've learned from dealing with the World Trade Organization, dealing with GATS, dealing with multilateral agreement on investment, and actually showing that when you strip away the kind of the normal way of dealing things, actually there's some very, very hard-nosed political decisions being made, only there being the wrong decisions being made. And we have to be there saying, no, you've got to make the right decisions. Sorry, that was a long rant. And it was just, right. The noise the hell out of me!
In the past,
you've named things understandable to me over debt and world trade. Because when it started, I didn't understand. By the time I'd read quite a lot of your
I wish we produced quite a lot.
Over the period, because I was reading things for the second time, because you sort of concentrated on certain things, I began to understand it enough to convince other people. So please do it with this.
Could I?
Do you want to just sort of wrap up? Because I think we'll be.
I know it's a really difficult to find a holiday abroad that doesn't involve flying. I've taken a coach holiday, which I would thoroughly recommend. If anybody would like such a coach holiday abroad, free for two people, just give me your name and address and I'll arrange for you to get it.
Wow, that's a great offer. That's an amazing offer. It sounds like one you should use to generate some publicity for your activities in Nottingham.
But offer to me in the post, Merlin. Seriously.
It's been really, really fascinating, particularly the discussions, to sort of hear the fact that actually we have changed the world before. And we do know what it takes to change the world. I think that for me is a very optimistic thing, to basically sort of like, we know that there have been major shifts in how society views global poverty, for example, smoking, women's situation in society. You know, we know that all these things have changed. They've changed because there has been a change in society's attitude. I think someone talked about a tipping point. You talked about a tipping point. You know, I think on climate change, we've reached one of those tipping points where we can. Societal attitudes have changed. We can harvest that for real change, for real laws that institutionalise what we want to achieve. And I think that's a fantastic. You know, that's really, really, you know, for me, it's very optimistic. Having, you know, had been involved in years and years of kind of trench warfare on the science and trench warfare on whether it exists or not. And I think that one of the roles that the World Development Movement can play in that is maintaining that shift in societal attitude by making climate change real, by continuing to bring people over, by showing what it actually is like, both in the UK but particularly in developing countries, what the impact of climate change is going to be. And I think in doing so, there's a few things that really... actually play into what we're trying to do. And it sounds sort of facetious, but people really aren't happy with now, are they? I mean, there is a big groundswell of unhappiness with how we are currently running our lives. And I think that we, in everything that we have done in the past 30-odd years, we've basically said another world is possible. We've said there's another way of doing this. That actually... tackling climate change can bring a lot of good and a lot of benefit into our own communities, as well as bringing benefit to other communities. I think your thing about the children, for me, it's, you know, I keep saying to people, I said that basically, if you want a good quality of life for your grandchildren, you have to accept that means getting a good quality of life for other people's grandchildren, because the two things are completely tied in together. You cannot guarantee a quality of life for your grandchildren here without guaranteeing that quality of life somewhere else. I think there's a massive, the other thing that's plays in our favour is there's a massive level of compassion. If you look at the polling through Make Poverty History, we got up to sort of 70% of people thinking that dealing with global poverty was a really important issue that had to be dealt with. You know, I'm not a huge fan of comic relief. You know, there's only so many red noses I can see in one day. But it does go to show the actual extent of compassion in the UK society. And I think we can build on Make Poverty History, because people have not forgotten Make Poverty History. People do have that level of compassion that we can build on. And I think we can also make it clear, you know, the idea of, you know, what being in a global village actually means. And what it does mean is that our lifestyles are based upon the productivity of other areas around the world. If 80% of our fruit and vegetables are imported, and climate change means those areas are not going to be able to grow those fruit and vegetables, quite frankly, that means, you know, we're going to suffer. And for those of us who have organic vegetable boxes and are faced with that cabbage that sits at the bottom of that box every week, quite frankly, the idea of not being able to go down and just occasionally buy some raspberries or green beans from Kenya is a daunting prospect. I spoke in Scotland recently, and someone said, if we have to return to the diet we used to have in Scotland 200 years ago, that's me, I'm emigrating. So I think there are things that we can do to really show what the impact of climate change will be, partly because we live in a global village, partly because climate change is going to happen here, and partly because people have a huge level of compassion for what climate change is going to mean for people who really genuinely want to get out of poverty and really want to actually deal with those underlying causes of poverty. So I think that, you know, we really, you know, in terms of how people respond on that ship going towards the iceberg, I suppose I'm the person who basically feels that I can get absolutely everybody on board that ship organised, storm the captain's cabin, get the ship turned around, but also basically make sure that ship isn't going around on a cruise doing nothing, but actually make sure that everybody on board has a good quality of life for the future. And I really believe that everybody here tonight believes that. And I really, really want to say, if you're not involved in the World Development Movement, quite frankly, please get involved. I know there are lots of opportunities for you to take activism. Please, I think we're a very, very great place to do it, because we have a strong tradition of telling it like it is and mobilising people to make sure that people have to listen to that message. You can join your local group tonight and get a little market mechanism here. You can get free national membership for a year, which means you get a wonderful magazine and occasionally a wonderful letter from me, which I'm sure is an encouragement enough. But please, please join. If not, if you don't want to join nationally, come to your group again, because please, we need to take action. And thank you so much for turning out tonight.
Thank you very much for... really inspired to take action.